Part 5 Chapter 1 Instructions have arrived requiring that returned men shall be treated with indulgence in the examination. They are to be allowed to submit subjects in which they are specially interested, and in those are to be examined. Unfortunately, the subjects in which we are specially interested do not figure in the syllabus. So we simplify matters after our own fashion. Every man is to submit 2 questions in each subject, and to undertake to be able to answer them. Westerholt has seated himself at the master's desk, and before him are several large, blank sheets of paper with our names. We begin to dictate to him the questions that we wish to be asked. Willy is uncommonly fastidious. He turns over and over the pages of his history book, and only after long searching up and down does he plump at last for the 2 questions following. When was the Battle of Zama? And when was the reign of Otto the Lazy? Westerholt and Albert take the lists of questions and subjects to the several masters. They go first to the principal, who eyes them with some apprehension. He has not been led to expect any good at our hands. He studies the lists and then lays them aside with a gesture of disgust. But, gentlemen, the minister requires that you submit such fields as you may be specially interested in. That is to say, certain definite large sections from each course of study. But what you offer here is no more than bare simple questions. The fields of our interest are no greater, answers Albert. But then don't we make up for it by knowing them so very très bon, adds Westerholt. The principal hands the lists back. No, I cannot agree to that. It would merely be to make a farce of the whole examination. Well, isn't it so anyway, retorts Westerholt, beaming. The principal shrugs his shoulders, but eventually accepts the lists. Willy unfortunately turns up 2 hours late for the essay, having got drunk with Carl the night before. Hullermann is greatly perturbed and asks Willy if he thinks he can now finish in time. Willy nods confidently, sits down in his place, takes from the pocket of his cutaway the essay written already for him by Ludwig, spreads it out in front of him, and then gratefully lays down his heavy head for a short nap. He is still so befuddled during the divinity test that he nearly gives up his answers in nature study by mistake. He has brought the whole lot along all in one envelope. Albert just prevented it at the last moment. We profit by the intervals during the oral examinations to have a last game of Scott. That is one of the few things we really did learn to some purpose in the army. Whenever one of the players is summoned for examination, he either puts down his cards for the moment and resumes the play afterwards, or else gives his hand to someone he can trust to get everything out of it that is in it. Willy has such incredible luck that he forgets everything else in the excitement of the play. Just as he is beginning to bid on a wonderful hand, a solo grand, without 2 and with Schneider, he is called up for examination in literature. He looks at the cards in despair. I'd rather fail than not play out this hand, he declares. But finally, he puts his cards into his pocket, making the other 2 promise over a handshake to wait until he returns and not to monkey with the hands in the meantime. The consequence is that he has forgotten the answer to one of his questions in literature. Literature is the crucial subject, you know, says Hullermann, full of concern. If you get below 3, you fail. Willy brightens up. What will you bet I don't make it? Answers Willy, his head still full of the solo grand in his pocket, and persuaded that a returned man could not possibly fail. The form master shakes his head. He is used to taking a lot from Willy. He waits patiently. Then, all at once, Willy pulls it off and starts back in hot haste to take Reinersmann's and Westerholt's scalps. 91! Says he triumphantly, and collects the money. We all pass, of course. The principal, taking heart again a little, now that he is about to get rid of the worst of the blackguards, cannot deny himself this opportunity of addressing to us yet a few golden words. He would like to make this leaving school a solemn sacrament, and begins to explain to us that, having been strengthened by our arduous experience, we are now to pass out into life with high hope and goodwill.
Pass out is not good, interrupts Villy. We've damn near passed out too often already in the other direction.
The principal draws in his horns. He sees that we are not amenable to soft soap. Even now, reconciliation is not possible with such unprofitable, ungrateful material. We go our ways. The next draft take their examination in 3 months' time. Ludwig has to wait till then, though it was he who wrote the answers for at least 4 of our fellows. But it is the primary law of this world, where the old rule the young, that one must serve one's time. It is no question of ability. Else, what would become of the old dodderers who cling to their power? A few days after the examination, we are sent out on probation to teach in the neighboring villages. I'm glad. I'm fed up with this aimless loafing around. It has produced only brooding and melancholy and senseless, noisy riot. Now I will work. I pack my trunk and set off with Villy. We have the good luck to be neighbors, our villages being barely an hour apart. I get lodgings in an old farmhouse. There are oak trees just outside the window, and the mild bleating of sheep comes in from the stalls. The farmer's wife at once settles me into a big armchair and begins to lay the table. She has a fixed idea that all townsmen are half-starved, and indeed, she is not so far wrong. With suppressed emotion, I watch things almost forgotten make their appearance on the table. An enormous ham, sausages as long as your arm, snow-white wheaten bread, and those buckwheat cakes with big lumps of ham in the middle, so beloved by Tjaden. There is a supply enough to feed a whole company. I begin to hoe in. The farmer's wife stands by, smiling broadly, hands on hips, obviously delighted. At the end of an hour, I have to stop with a sigh, though Mother Schomacher still urges me on. At that moment, Villy comes in to visit me.
Now you can have your wish, I say to my hostess. Now you will see something. I'm not a patch on him.
Villy does as a soldier should do. He wastes no time in ceremony, but gets on with the job. At the invitation of Mother Schomacher, he begins with the buckwheat cakes. By the time he has reached the cheese, the farmer's wife is leaning back against the cupboard and looking at Villy with admiration and astonishment, as if he were the 8th wonder of the world. Highly flattered, she produces yet another great dish of pudding, and Villy puts that away too.
Well, says he, taking a breather but retaining his spoon when she clears away the dish. That has given me a real appetite. What about a good square meal now?
With this remark, he wins Mother Schomacher's heart forever. Embarrassed and unsure of myself, I perch at the teacher's desk. Before me, 40 children are seated. These are the youngest. There they sit, all in perfect alignment, their fat little fists folded over their boxes of slate pencils and pens, their slates and notebooks before them. The school has only 3 classes, so that in each there are children of varying ages. The smallest are 7, the oldest 10 years of age. The wooden shoes are scraping on the floor. There is a peat fire crackling in the stove. Some of the children with their woolen scarves and hairy cowhide satchels have had to walk 2 hours to school. Their things have become wet and are now beginning to steam in the dry air of the room. The smallest of them with round apple cheeks stare up at me. A couple of girls are giggling secretly.
One fair-headed child is absorbed in picking his nose. Another, under cover of the back of the boy in front of him, is stuffing down a thick slice of bread and butter. But every one of them watches my least movement with closest attentiveness. I shift uncomfortably on my stool. It is only a week since I, too, was sitting on a form, even as they, watching Hullerman's florid, hackneyed gestures while he talked about the poets of the wars of liberation. Now I am a Hullerman myself, at least to the youngsters down there. Children, now we shall try to write a capital letter L, I say, and go to the blackboard. 10 lines of L's, then 5 lines of Lena, and 5 lines of Larch. I write out the words slowly with chalk. A shuffling and rustling begins behind me. I expect to find that they are laughing at me and turn around. But it is only the notebooks being opened and the slates put in readiness. The 40 heads are bent obediently over their task. I am almost surprised. The slate pencils are squeaking, the pens scratching. I pass to and fro between the forms. On the wall hangs a crucifix, a stuffed barn owl, and a map of Europe. Outside the windows, the clouds drive steadily by, swift and low. The map of Germany is colored in brown and green. I stop before it. The frontiers are hatched in red and make a curious zigzag from top to bottom. Cologne, Aachen. There are the thin black lines marking the railways. Herbesthal, Liège, Brussels, Lille. I stand on tiptoe. Roubaix, Arras, Ostend. Where is Mount Kemmel, then? It isn't marked at all. But there is Langemark, Ypres, Bichota, Staden. How small they are on the map. Tiny points only. Secluded, tiny points. And yet how the heavens thundered and the earth raged there on the 31st of July when the big offensive began, and before nightfall we had lost every officer. I turn away and survey the fair and dark heads bending zealously over the words Lena and Larch. Strange. For them, those tiny points on the map will be no more than just so much stuff to be learned. A few new place names and a number of dates to be memorized by note in the history lesson, like the 7 Years' War or some battle against the Romans. A little Tom Thumb jumps up in the second row and waves his notebook in the air. He has done his 20 lines. I go over and point out that he has made the bottom stroke of the L a trifle too long. He looks up at me so radiantly with his liquid blue eyes that I must drop my gaze a moment. I go hastily to the blackboard to write 2 more words with another capital letter. Carl and... I pause for a second, but I can do no other. An invisible hand guides the chalk. Mount Kemmel. Carl, what is that? I ask. Every hand goes up.
A man,
shouts the little Tom Thumb of before.
And Mount Kemmel?
I ask after a short pause, almost choking.
Silence.
At last a little girl puts up her hand.
Out of the Bible?
She says hesitatingly. I look at her a while.
No, I then say.
That is not right.
You mean the Mount of Olives? Or Lebanon, perhaps, do you?
The girl nods, crestfallen. I stroke her hair. Then we shall write that this time. Lebanon is a very pretty word. Thoughtfully, I resume my patrolling to and fro between the benches. Now and again, I catch a searching glance above the edge of a copybook. I stand still near the stove and look at the young faces. Most of them are good-natured and ordinary. Some are sly, others stupid. But in a few, there is a flicker of something brighter. For these, life will not be so obvious, and all things will not go so smoothly.
Suddenly, a great sense of despondency comes over me. Tomorrow we shall take the prepositions, I think to myself, and next week we shall have a dictation. In a year's time, you will have by heart 50 questions from the catechism. In 4 years, you will start the larger multiplication tables. And so you will grow up, and time will take you in his pincers, one dumbly, another savagely, or gently, or shatteringly. Each will have his own destiny, and thus or thus it will overtake you. What help shall I be to you then with my conjugations and enumerations of all the rivers of Germany? 40 of you, 40 different lives standing behind you and waiting. How gladly would I help you if I could? But who can really help another here? Have I even been able to help Adolf Bethke? The bell rings. The first lesson is over. Next day we don our swallow-tailed coats, mine was only just ready in time, and go to call on the parson. This is matter of breviary. We are quite well received, though with a certain reserve. Our insubordination at college has won for us a rather doubtful reputation in respectable circles. In the evening we propose to visit the mayor, that also being part of our duties. We encounter him, however, in the village pub, which does service also as post office. He is a shrewd-looking old farmer with a wrinkled face, who at once invites us to a round of double schnapps. We accept. Then two or three more farmers come in, wink at one another, greet us, and also invite us to a glass. They are winking and mouthing at each other behind their hands, the poor fools. We realize at once what they would be at. They mean to try and get us tight, by way of having a little joke among themselves. They have worked it often before, so it would seem, for with a knowing smirk they now begin to tell us of certain other young teachers who have been here. There are three reasons why they think they should soon get the better of us. First, because, so they imagine, no townsman could possibly carry so much liquor as they. Second, because schoolmasters are educated, and therefore must a priori be weaker than they. And third, because lads so young as ourselves cannot really have had any practice. And that may well have been so with the other probationers who have been here. But in our case, they are reckoning without one thing, namely that we have been soldiers for a few years, and so understand very well how to drink schnapps by the mess tin full. We accept the challenge. The farmers merely want to make us look a little bit foolish, but we, on the other hand, are undertaking to uphold a threefold honor, which, of course, multiplies our strength. The mayor, the village clerk, and a couple more tough-looking farmers sit down over against us. These are apparently their most confirmed topers. With a faintly sly farmer's grin, they touch glasses with us. Villy is already acting as if he were a bit merry. The grin broadens. Villy and I stand a round of beer with schnapps. That draws a broadside of 7 more rounds from the others. They count on that to see us under. A little astonished, they watch us empty our glasses. A certain mild approbation is discernible in the way that they eye us. Villy imperturbably orders a new round. But no beer this time, mind you. Only double schnapps, he calls to the barman. Struth? Neat schnapps, says the mayor. Why, sure, says Villy calmly. Else we'll be sitting here till early morning. Beer only makes a man sober. The astonishment in the eyes of the mayor is waxing visibly. One of the farmers admits in an unsteady voice that we certainly can swill pretty well. Two others rise up silently and go off. Already one or two of our antagonists are trying to empty out their glasses furtively under the table. But Villy watches that none gets away with it. Hands above the table, he insists, forcing the glasses to their lips. The smile has vanished. We are gaining ground. Within an hour, most of them are lying about the room with cheese-like faces, or else have staggered out, humiliated. The group about the table has dwindled to the mayor and the village clerk. Now begins a duel between these two and ourselves. Already we are seeing double, but the others have been lisping for some time now, and that renews our heart. After another half an hour, when we are all as red as turkeys, Vili delivers the coup de grace.
4 beer mugs of cognac, he booms across the counter.
The mayor starts back in his chair. The glasses come. Vili pushes 2 into their hands.
Cheer-o!
They stare at us.
Now, all in one go,
cries Vili, his face glowing. The village clerk tries to back out, but Vili is inflexible.
In 4 gulps, pleads the mayor, much humbled.
In 1 gulp, insists Vili, getting up and touching glasses with the clerk.
I stand up likewise.
Well, cheer-o to your very good healths. Here goes,
we shout at our 2 befuddled opponents. They look at us like a couple of calves about to be slaughtered and take a gulp.
No, on with it, or do you want to go down?
Yells Vili.
Stand up to it.
They stagger to their feet and drink. In various ways they try to take a breather, but we jeer at them and show our empty glasses.
Your very best health. No, all of it. Mop it up.
They gulp it down. Then slowly but surely, they sink to the floor. We have won. At slow drinking, they might perhaps have seen us out, but we have had special training in the express method, and to make them take it at our pace was our salvation. Swaying and tottering, we survey the field with pride. Beside ourselves, not a man is left standing. The postman, who at the same time is the bartender, is resting his head on the counter and wailing intermittently for a wife who died in childbed while he was away at the war.
Martha! Martha!
He sobs in a weird, high-pitched voice.
Don't mind him, says the barmaid. He always does that at these times.
The lamentation offends our ears, and anyway, it is time to be going. Vili picks up the mayor, and I take the lighter, more wizened village clerk, and so we trundle them home. That is the final touch to our triumph. We deposit the clerk outside his own door and knock until a light appears. But someone is awaiting the mayor. His wife is already standing in the door.
Herr Jesus, she cries. The new schoolteachers! So young and such topers. A pretty beginning, I must say.
Vili tries to explain that it was an affair of honor, but gets sadly mixed.
Where would you like us to put him? I ask at last.
Let the old pig lie, she snaps.
We dump him down on a sofa. Then Vili, with a smile like a child, asks if we might have some coffee. The woman looks at him as if he were a Hottentot.
Well, we brought your husband home for you, explains Vili, beaming.
Not even his hard-baked old body can withstand such sublimely unconscious impudence. Shaking her head solemnly, she pours out a couple of large cups of coffee, meantime giving us a good scolding. We say yes to everything. It is always best at such times. From this day on, we are regarded as men of standing in the village, and everywhere are saluted with respect.